Hi again, my name is Steve Elzinga. This is the coaching class. I want to talk about hats. When someone plays baseball, they wear a baseball cap. A policeman has a certain kind of hat. When you're in the Army, you wear a certain kind of a hat. A hat identifies who you are. Visually, you can look at someone and you go, I know what this person is and what they do. Now, in coaching and counseling and pastoral care, and so we don't literally wear hats, maybe we should, because they're distinctive roles. And sometimes we confuse our clients and we even confuse ourselves because we're not sure what hat we're wearing. We use this hat as a metaphor for the different roles that we have. You know, when I'm talking to my children, I put on the parent hat. When I preach, I put on the preaching hat. And usually the context of the situation lets people know what I'm doing. When I stand behind the pulpit, people expect the preaching hat. When I sit down at home with my family, it's the parenting hat. When I sit with my wife, it's the marriage. So a lot of times the hat that you wear fits the context, and there's no confusion. But sometimes it's confusing. Are you the parent? Are you the marriage partner? Are you the teacher? Are you the mentor? Are you the pastor? Are you the counselor? Are you the coach? These are different roles. And coaching is a very specific kind of role. We've tried to outline that over and over and over again in this class. It's not counseling. It's not pastoral care. Those are all good things. But coaching is different, those things. So in this session, I want to talk about when you take the coaching hat off. Is it legitimate to do that? And I'm suggesting that it is. But there's a way to do it, or otherwise you end up confusing your client and he's not sure what role you are in or what coaching is, and all of a sudden all the lines and all these roles become very blurry. And you don't want that. So, first of all, when would you do this? When would you actually take the coaching hat off and put what hat on? What are signs of trouble in the coaching relationship? Number one, the client is hurting themselves. Okay, some of the goals, either they're doing it the wrong way, they're not following through, or they're hurting, they're getting more depressed, they're getting more anxious, they're like a deer caught in the headlights, they don't know which way to go, and they could get hurt. The job is getting worse, or their marriage is getting worse, their parenting is getting worse, things are not going well. Client is hurting themselves, client is hurting others. Marriage is not going well, family's not going well, the relationship to the boss at work is not going well, ministry is not going well. So you're working on these things, but the client is getting hurt, the client is hurting other people. The client seeks to do something unbiblical. Okay, remember, we're asking the client to figure out what he wants to do. Or what she wants to do. We're not trying to come up with a goal for them. We want them to come up with their own goal. So we're trusting them. Remember, with the prerequisite, they have to have a walk with God. They have to be Christian. They have to be daily talking and listening to God. So hopefully, and they're seeking God's will and God's purpose in their life. They're willing to sacrifice their bodies and to be a living sacrifice to God. But let's say they're not. Right? I mean, we don't control our client. And let's say the client wants to do something that isn't right. He wants to, get even with his ex-wife, or he wants to get rid of a partner that he has in business, or something that you look at and you go, I think this is unbiblical. And you can't just, okay, well, I'm your coach, so I'm going to help you do whatever it is that you want to do. So that's trouble. So, what do you do about these kinds of things? Well, first of all, you gently steer them. Okay? How do you gently steer them? And this is, I think this is still in the coaching realm. You really haven't switched hats. Well, maybe a little bit, because you're directing, or at least you're pushing in a certain direction, whereas in coaching you tend not to push. But this is a gentle push. You give applicable verse, give an applicable verse and ask them to tell you what they think it means. So I've done this. I've had, not clients, but people attending my church, a young couple coming, and they want me to marry them. And, you know, they've been recently coming to church, or they come to church once in a while. They're somehow connected to our church, but not greatly connected. And I'm the only pastor they know. So they want to get married a year from now, you know, in April. And so I always agree to meet with them. And I meet with them. And, by the way, they're living together. They've been living together for 6 months. And now they want to get married. And maybe they've heard some of the messages. They think this is a good thing to do. Marriage is a good thing, so they want to do this. But they're already living together. So what do you do? So I have them and I meet with them. And I ask how they met. And we talk about their relationship. And generally I let them talk. We're getting to know each other. I'm getting to know their story and so on. But finally, after there's some rapport that has been established, I'll ask this question. I'll preamble the question by saying, you know, at least in the United States, 50% of marriages end in divorce. What makes you think your marriage will not be part of that 50% that ends in divorce? And every couple says the same thing. They'll say, well, it's because we really love each other. I say, well, you know, every couple that gets married, they would say they love each other too. But 50% of them that say that are wrong. They still end up in divorce. Well, we talk about everything, and we stay up all night, you know, saying, you know, working things out. We've been through some things, and we survived these things. I mean, well, everyone's done that. I mean, every couple that wants to get married has been through some things and stay up all night talking about things. That's why they want to get married. I mean, everything that you say is what everyone says. And yet, half of those people are wrong when it comes to their commitment and staying married. So what makes you think you are going to be in the 50% that make it? Eventually, people will say, I don't know. Maybe you can't know. And then I'll say, yes, you can. I knew. When I made a commitment to my wife, I knew it would stand. And I'll tell you why. Because my commitment was not based on how well we talked things over and how we loved one another and how we love doing the same things. Because those things could change. Our commitment was based on our relationship to God, the most significant thing in our life. And our family and friends who have a relationship. So I have to break my relationship to God to get out of this marriage. See, that's a stronger commitment. Oh, okay. So you're pushing him in that direction. Okay. So maybe in the second session, you know, we talk more and more about how they met and so on. And so, but there's a problem. There's an elephant in the room that we haven't talked about. And this problem of that they're living together. And they don't think anything of it. So that's what they want to do. Now, if I'm a coach, I'm just helping them. They want to get married. I help them plan the marriage, and they get married. But see, they're doing something unbiblical. They're living together, and they should be living together. Living together is the thing that is reserved for marriage. That's what the Bible says. So how do I do this without directing them? And pushing them, or, you know, by the authority, I'm the pastor of this church, and you're unbiblical, and you need to change this, okay? Yeah, but in coaching, we're not pushing people, we're not shoving people, because that doesn't work. We need people to figure out their own answers to their own problems. They don't know that this is a problem yet. So, what's a way to do this? You come up with an applicable verse. So this is what I do. At some point, I'll say, hey, this is a verse I want you to read. I want you to tell me what you think it means. 1 Corinthians 6, verse 16. Paul says, do you not know that he who unites himself with a prostitute is one with her in body? For it is said, the two will become one flesh. Oh, and by the way, I'll tell them, that phrase, the two will become one flesh, is found in Genesis 2, Adam and Eve. It's talking about Adam and Eve. And the two became one flesh. It's talking about a physical connection, a spiritual and physical connection. You know, we're talking about sex here. And it's reserved for marriage. It says here that the two actually become one flesh. This is what happens. Okay? And Paul is applying this to this other situation. It's, you know, why am I bringing up a verse that talks about a guy and a prostitute? Well, I'll just leave it there. I'll just read this verse. Tell him that, you know, the two become one flesh is what happened to Adam and Eve back in Genesis chapter 2. And then ask, what do you think this means? The last couple that I did that, the girl had no idea what it meant. I don't know what it means. How does it relate to us at all? But the guy figured it out. He looked at it and said, it seems like this verse is saying we're already married. Because in this case, you know, when a guy lies with a prostitute, they become one. It doesn't matter what, there's no wedding ceremony here. You do the act, you're married. And so he looked at it and said, is that what this person is saying? I said, well, I think it does. So, what does that mean? I said, so what does that mean? So he looked at me and said, it means we're already married. I said, yeah. That's what it means. See, now I didn't tell him that. I didn't force some doctrine on him. I just showed him a verse and asked him what he thought it meant. And then, I'm not going to force the solution. What do you want to do about it? What do you want to do about it? What can we do about it? They didn't know. So we had to spend time exploring. We had to do the coaching thing. So we got a problem. We have something that we want to change, that something we want to fix. And how are we going to do it? So we have to start brainstorming possible solutions. What are some solutions? Well, we could just say you're married already. But what about a ceremony? Well, I guess we could have a ceremony. But you're already married. So anyway, we went through, finished the story. We went through all kinds of solutions. One of the solutions that we came up with is, well, we've sort of done it the wrong way so far. Let's reboot. And so I will move out, and now we will be, we won't live with each other for this next year, and we'll work towards this wedding. We failed. We didn't do it right. But let's reboot and change that. That was one solution. Another solution was we get married next week. Since we're married already, let's just make it official before God. With family, maybe the parents only in the office, not a state wedding, but just in my office wedding before God, and then work towards a public ceremony, which you're going to call your wedding in April. You know, a year from now. That, by the way, is what they eventually did. So, there was a problem, and I don't want to just help someone do something that's unbiblical, but I don't want to just tell them what to do either. I want to help them figure out what they should do about a problem. So, first of all, this is one direction to go. Give an applicable verse and then ask them to tell you what they think about it. And then you go through the whole coaching process of trying to figure out answers to this problem. Will you let them come up with the solutions? Or number two, ask for permission from the client to take a coaching hat off and put on a hat of a pastor. So now, again, I'm not trying to direct. I'm not telling you what to do. In fact, I'm trying to be real humble about this. There's a problem here in our coaching relationship because of, you know, we're stuck or things aren't working or, you know, the person wants something that I don't believe in. We got a problem. And I would like permission from you, the client, to take off the coaching hat. So we're clearly not in the coaching realm right now. And I want to be very clear that I'm putting on a different hat. Is that going to be okay? And the client says, okay. Well, then I can say, well, I'd like to put on the pastor hat. and do a little pastoral care with you right now. Or I want to put on the counselor hat because I think there's some things in your past that are thwarting you, that are keeping you from doing what it is, you know, everything that we talk about. There's some anger issue, or there's some problem, relationship issue, or there's something that happened with your father that really needs to be resolved, that we can't, you know, or they're drinking, they're an alcoholic. Alcoholism is a primary problem. If you don't fix that, you can't fix other things. So I have to put on a different hat, and we have to deal with it in a different way than this whole coaching process. Or a mentor. I need to mentor you in some things. You need to learn time management. Time management is killing you. And you're not achieving anything because you don't know a couple things. And if I just take off the coaching hat and put on the mentor hat for a minute, or the teaching hat, I can teach you this skill, and this skill will help you in our coaching relationship. Do you mind if I do that for a little while? If the client is open to this change of role, then simply make the issue the area in the client's life where change needs to happen. So it's very simple. Once you make the problem or whatever it is that's in the way of the coaching thing, now you make that the issue. And now you can use some of the same coaching techniques with this issue. 2, proceed to help the client figure out what action step he or she wants to take. 3, help the client make a plan of action necessary to accomplish this new goal. So it's similar to coaching, but it's not. And it's significantly different that you need to almost literally, I mean, I almost would pantomime, look, I have the coaching hat on and I'm taking it off. And I'm putting on the counselor hat. Okay? This is not the coaching hat. This is the counselor hat. I want you to be very clear that we're not coaching right now. We're counseling. And what that is and why we're doing it. Help the client manage the plan. Okay. Make sure you make a big deal about switching hats. 1, the success of coaching is dependent on your relationship with your client. And the relationship with your client has been established in this whole coaching thing. I don't give you answers. I don't give you suggestions. I don't counsel you. I don't try to figure out what's wrong with you. I don't do any of those things. I help you figure out what it is that you want to do, what you want to change. I help you make a plan of how you're going to change it. I help hold you accountable to that plan, but I don't do these other things. If I start doing those things, if I start interspersing, you know, little suggestions, little stories of things that happened to me, then the client will stop taking responsibility. You know, in the coaching relationship, over time, the client starts to learn that he or she is responsible. And if you go in and change the rules of the game by all of a sudden becoming a counselor or becoming an advisor, well, then you're not letting the client figure these things out. And the client will let you. I mean, most people are willing to let other people do it for them. If you do it, people will let you. And then they will stop taking ownership. And they will stop, you know, trying to, you know, figure out things for themselves. So your coaching relationship and what it is hugely important. So that's why you literally want to take off a hat and put on a different hat. I don't want the client confused with what we're doing. 2, the success of coaching is making the client take responsibility for his life. So when you mentor, you're taking some responsibility. When you teach, you're taking responsibility. I'm not saying that you don't do these things. Sometimes mentoring is necessary. Sometimes teaching is necessary. Your client needs to learn these things before he... If he doesn't have a walk with God, you need to have, as a pastor, come alongside and say, let me help you get a walk with God. This is what a walk with God is. This is what I'd like you to try this week. You're more directive. That's perfectly legitimate. Parenting is more directive. Parenting is a good thing. It's just that coaching is a different thing. And you don't want your client confused about these things. 3, the success of coaching is found in the coach's consistency in doing the coaching things. Not the pastoral care things, not the teaching things, not the counseling things, and not the mentoring things. That's why it's important that you make a big deal about switching hats. It's not something that you do very often. I'm just saying that once in a while you may have to do that. But when you don't just, I just got to deal with this one little thing. I'm not going to make a big deal about the hats and all that stuff. I'm just going to just give him a little advice on this. He's stuck with that, and I know what will help him. If I just tell him this one thing, he can do it, and he'll... Don't do that. I'm saying don't do that. Anytime you step out of the coaching role, anytime you want to give advice, you want to do counseling, you want to do pastoral care, you want to do mentoring, you make a big deal about switching hats. Even if it's a small thing, even if it's something that isn't going to take very long, it's fine. And how long does it take? Take this hat off, put this hat on, do the thing, take it off, put the coaching hat on again. Clear? All right, we'll see you again next time.